Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes Imbolo Mbue, author of Behold the Dreamers, a compulsively readable debut novel about marriage, immigration, class, race, and the trapdoors in the American dream. The unforgettable story of a young Cameroonian couple making a new life in New York just as the Great Recession upends the economy. Thursday, March 15th at 6:30 p.m. More at theivybookshop.com or 410-377-2966.
Well, here we go again. Hello from the Baltimore Sun. I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 367. For Friday, it's March 9th, 2018. And look, today's show is a foodie show, but it's also a show about traditions. Some things I think you should know about if you don't already. And for me, it's a way of checking in to see if certain old and familiar things are still there. I'm talking about annual church suppers. Now, John Shields, a Baltimore native, proprietor of Gertrude's Restaurant, he'll be joining me on the show today. He calls these faith-based pop-up restaurants, and he's got a point. These dinners are offered only once, sometimes twice a year. Some of the best known are the German sour beef and dumpling dinner at Zion Church of the City of Baltimore, the weekly Lenten fish fries at Catholic parishes, the annual Polish festivals of Holy Rosary Church that require the production of up to 40,000 pierogies, and the twice-yearly spaghetti and ravioli dinners at St. Leo's in Little Italy. If you've never been to any of these, this is the year to give one or maybe all of them a try. In today's show, John Shields and I will be speaking with organizers of these events. It takes hundreds of volunteers to make all those pierogies, dumplings, and crab cakes, and to keep these traditions going. That's coming right up. First, we have a book recommendation from Baltimore County librarian and Roughly Speaking critic Paula Gallagher. This is a book for people interested in the origins of foods. It's The Food Explorer, The True Adventures of the Globetrotting Botanist Who Transformed What America Eats. It's a new book by Daniel Stone.
Stone, who is a writer for National Geographic, tells the story of David Fairchild, who at the age of 20 in 1889 was a junior scientist at the Department of Agriculture. He wanted to help farmers out by trying to combat some of the problems that they were having with their crops. But as a young man, he was very interested in traveling. Food was just starting to become more than pure sustenance. Many fruits and vegetables were rare and even suspect, considered to be harder to digest than meat. So he starts to embark on what becomes a lifelong journey to find foreign crops that are of economic value in the United States. And over the course of his lifetime in this book, he visits 50 countries on five continents. And so this is a really fascinating micro history of where so many of our produce crops come from. So much of this book is figuring out how he's going to get these crops back. Specimens, he's got to prepare cuttings for the journey, dealing with pests. And he eventually becomes the head of the Office of Seed and Plant Introduction for the United States government. So what we get here, I don't feel like I ever got very close to the man himself, but you hear about his exploits and it's the food that brings you in and keeps you there. You hear about mangoes and nectarines, avocados. He actually discovered quinoa back in the Andes in the late 1800s. And at that time, wasn't sure what to do with it. Are we going to eat the leaves that look like spinach? Are we going to eat the grain? It's something that never caught on. At that point, we couldn't test for nutrition, so we didn't know that it was such a high protein crop. He also discovers zucchini and broccoli. So many things that we take for granted in the American supermarket and on our table. These foods are immigrants, and it's such a timely thing to think about now when we think about how America came together. Not just people, but food immigration. It's an approachable history, it's entertaining, and it's especially rewarding to anyone with an interest in America's culinary roots. So again, this book is The Food Explorer, The True Adventures of the Globetrotting Botanist Who Transformed What America Eats by Daniel Stone.
Paula Gallagher is a librarian at the Pikesville branch of the Baltimore County Public Library. I'm trying not to pop my peas. You can catch her book recommendations weekly on Roughly Speaking. Now, to talk with our cookbook author and restaurateur, John Shields. One of the things that I was thinking about recently was these traditions of eating in churches, meals that churches offer, spaghetti dinners, pancake breakfasts. And, you know, the years go by, time goes by. If you don't take the time to go to one and visit and have that experience, you miss it. You got to really pay attention. And I don't just mean your own church. There was a man who worked here years ago, George Hiltner. He was a reporter for the Morning Sun. And one of the things he loved to do was pancake breakfasts. He didn't care where they were. He kept an eye on volunteer fire companies and churches, pancake breakfasts. And he loved to just go there and have that experience, the camaraderie, meet some new people. Sort of like bull roasts. I have some friends who are like professional bull roast goers. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter what the cause is or where it is. They just love to go to bull roasts.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do.
Well, there's these annual events that churches sponsor that if you don't pay attention and don't put it on the calendar, you kind of miss this Baltimore experience.
Yeah.
Zion Lutheran Church's sour beef and dumplings dinner, right?
It's annual. That's legendary.
Right.
Yeah.
Name another one. I thought of St. Leo's ravioli dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Everybody goes to that one.
They have a couple.
Yeah.
If you miss the one in March, which just happened, there's another one in November.
Yeah, they're some of the best ones. They have the one with the pierogies and the Gawumpkis,
that's Holy Rosary.
Holy Rosary.
We're going to be speaking with Christina Grabowski about that event.
Yep. That's an unbelievable one. For years, and I'm not 100% sure if it's still going on, but St. Anne's Church on Greenmount Avenue, they would always have a fish fry during Lent.
During Lent,
yeah.
Right. What about other parts of Maryland? Since you get around so much, Mr. Chesapeake Cuisine, I've never had this. The stuffed ham dinner, which is a Southern Maryland tradition?
It is. A lot of churches actually do that every year. They generally do it around Thanksgiving or in the early spring. It's interesting. They're the two times.
But still mostly Southern Maryland?
Yeah, mostly you'll find that.
You don't see that elsewhere?
No, you don't. And it takes a lot of work, a lot of effort getting that together because there's a lot of chopping involved in making a stuffed ham.
What actually is in the stuffed ham?
Well, you're using a corned ham or a brined ham, so it hasn't been smoked or anything like that. And then you take in this whole thing full of cabbages and kale and watercress, onions, chopped up onions, mustard seed, hot pepper flakes, a lot of salt and pepper in it, and making this mixture of raw vegetable. And then you're making deep slits into this ham, this ham, and you stuff the greens into those slits. And then you're essentially wrapping it up either in a T-shirt or...
come on, a T-shirt.
Yeah, that's what most of them use, extra large T-shirts.
Really? That haven't been worn by anyone.
They said preferably.
Plain with no printing on
it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I use cheesecloth myself.
And what, put it in the oven?
No, you put it in a great big pot of water. And you're essentially, you're poaching it for hours. And then you let it cool for a while in that water. Then you refrigerate it overnight. The next day you unwrap it and you slice it down real thin. And it is gorgeous. It's these long veins of green.
Inside the ham.
Inside the ham.
And it
running
stays together pretty well.
Beautiful.
Because of the way it was poached.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and then they usually will make either beaten biscuits or some other kind of biscuit. And everything you can imagine goes with that.
Okay, so someone's listening right now and says, you know, that's a Maryland tradition I've never had, including me.
Yeah.
I'd like to try that.
Yeah.
So what, do you look for church listings in Southern Maryland for it?
Or? You can do that. You can also go to the Maryland Department of Tourism website, and they'll give listings for it in all the different regions. And they generally do list the stuffed ham dinners because they're pretty unique. And, they're not happening as much as they used to. So if you get a chance, go. Check it out.
Getting back to Baltimore and things to eat around town that churches offer.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking in this hour about sour beef and dumplings in the fall, crab cakes and coleslaw during Lent, and pierogies. In fact, we'll start with pierogies. in the Polish style, as offered every year by the thousands by the people of Holy Rosary Parish in Fells Point. Holy Rosary has two big festivals each year, one in spring, one in fall. Christine Grabowski is our guest. So tell us what Holy Rosary has on the agenda for this year and every year.
Now's a busy time of the season for us. We start off on April 8th is Divine Mercy Sunday. So on Saturday, April 7th, we prepare, as we expect, about 800 to 1,000 people attending that Mass on Sunday at 1:30 with Archbishop Laurie. So on Saturday, we'll be, you know, we have to prepare and we have to have our pierogies because that's what we're known for. And we'll have other items, stuffed cabbage rolls, which are known as gołąbki, freshly made. Then in May, we celebrate our spring festival. That happens on Saturday, May 19th, and Sunday, May 20th. And that's a full-service Polish kitchen, Polish soup, Polish kielbasa, fresh and smoked, the Polish beer. Garden is outside. We have activities for the children from, you know, moon slides, crafts. A $2 admission gets you into the school hall, and then we have Polish crafts. We have a flea market, and there's other vendors also that, you know, excite the community around us, which is Canton Fells Point. But now we're at the point where we also get people from outside in the surrounding counties.
And then you repeat this in the fall?
That is correct. Our fall festival is held again in September. So if you don't had the opportunity to come out in the springtime, there's also an opportunity to come out in the fall. And basically, with our festival, all the proceeds are given back to the church. And as a matter of fact, this year, our goal from last year and this year is we need a new roof. The church has the original slate roof, so it's over 90 plus years, and we have to replace it. It's beyond repair. So we need to raise close to $1.1 million. So from many of the pierogi sales, the festival, other dances that we have throughout the year, all that money from 2017 and all of 2018 will be towards that fund.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned pierogies as a fundraiser. I remember when little St. Michael's Catholic Ukrainian Church was on a side street, and they wanted to build a bigger church, and the women of the parish made so many pierogies. Or pierogi, as they pronounce them. And
yes,
you could go there every Friday and buy them. So how many pierogies do you go through for, the spring festival? Do you have any
20,
idea?
20,000.
How many?
20,000.
Come on, Christina.
Yes. We have several groups within the church. We have the Polish school. So we have the Polish family organization. We have three or four different groups that assist in what, like on March, Saturday, March 24th, we'll be making the fresh stuffed cabbage rolls for the festival. So we need to make close to 2,500 of those. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is all about just making those items. We dedicate a weekend to certain food items, and then obviously we have a freezer and we freeze them, and then when we're ready to go, you know, we remove them and we're good for the festival.
And you repeat this in the fall. Another 20,000 pierogies?
Give or take. Sometimes, depending on what weekend we fall into. Like the spring festival, obviously, this year, it's on a weekend where the Preakness is happening. But that still doesn't, you know, we don't look at those as a, you know, a down number. Whoever comes. And then, like I said, we always have the after fact where people will say, oh, I couldn't make it out because, you know, for this reason, I was out of town or I had to go to this other event. No problem. We have sales just like we do. Saturday, April 7th is going to be a pierogi day for us also. And that's going to be in the church hall from, we have them, you know, every so often during the month. So that Saturday, April 7th, if you can't make it to the spring festival or fall festival, you can get them, you know, right then and there. We have them under the church and they're $8 per dozen. We have four types. We have sauerkraut, meat from potato and cheese, and farmer's cheese. So, you know, you can always call the rectory and always find out the dates when we have just the pierogi sale if you can't make it to the festival.
Yeah. At the festival, how are the pierogies served to the public?
You can buy them two ways. We have pierogi to go, which are frozen, and, you know, there's obviously a dozen for $8. And then you can also buy in the what we call the Polish kuchnia, which is the Polish kitchen. You can get them warm. So they usually serve them with either, you know, sour, depending on what pierogi you like. The farmer's cheese, you know, we have the sour cream there to dress them up. Obviously, sauerkraut meat are just served with the onion, you know, caramelized onion on top with bacon. So it depends, you know, how you want to do it. You can get them plain or you can get them, you know, topped with a favorite topping.
Nice. Geez, I'm glad you mentioned all these dates because I have a hankering for pierogi made the old-fashioned way and made by people with that ethnic heritage and in a church. That's what I prefer, my pierogi. So, okay. Right. Well, Christina, boy, that sounds great. So we got plenty of dates here to get over to Holy Rosary and take advantage of this.
Yeah, and I appreciate you taking the time to, you know, express some interest. And obviously everything that we collect goes right back into the church because we do have, you know, we're not a large parish by any means compared to, like, some of the county churches, but we do have, you know, 450-some-plus families strong that always want to volunteer and help out. And we always feel that we, you know, help out the community also. And with Cristo Rey School right next to us, they are a great help in, you know, letting us use their facility as well. So kudos to them and for their help and for everyone who wants to help us by, you know, getting the word out there to, you know, to the public.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Christine Grabowski with Holy Rosary Church at 408 South Chester Street in Fells Point. You can find more information about Holy Rosary's events in the notes with this podcast. Also in our notes today are links to information about Fish Fry Fridays during the Lenten season. There are a number of them in the region, as Catholics who observe the tradition of fasting and abstinence refrain from eating meat in the weeks leading up to Easter. One of these seafood meals that takes place each Friday during Lent is at Our Lady Queen of Peace Church in Middle River. The Knights of Columbus there put it on each week. Here's Timothy McCubbin to tell us about it.
The way it's developed over the 8 years we've been running it, and we call it a seafood dinner as opposed to just a fish fry anymore. We have fried fish, obviously. That's how we started. We also threw in fried shrimp, butterflied shrimp, cotties, a Baltimore favorite. We added steamed shrimp, and 2 years ago we added crab cakes. And then we have one of our Sodality members here, Miss Kathy, who volunteered a couple of years ago. She said she had a coleslaw recipe, and if I'd like, she'd be happy to come in and make it. As a matter of fact, there's a crew over in the kitchen right now chopping and paring and everything else to make up her coleslaw.
Mm.
And we have a homemade pasta salad, French fries, dessert, sheet cake from a local bakery that does just a fantastic job. And then your drink, it's all included.
You know, John, you and I are old enough to remember fish on Fridays because you didn't eat meat on Fridays,
that's right?
Right,
it was fish Friday.
And I don't know what year that was that went away. Sometime in the 60s, I think, late 60s maybe?
Yeah, maybe that.
And I was sort of sorry to see it go, but I've maintained the tradition. I don't know about you, over the years, fish on Fridays, avoiding meat, or maybe having a meatless pizza or something.
Yeah.
So it sticks with you, doesn't it?
Tradition. It does. It's in the DNA now.
Of Catholics who grew up that way, right? So,
correct.
Is the same with you, Tim?
Absolutely. Yeah. Every Friday in during Lent is abstinence from just eating meat. And then, of course, Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, you actually fast as a Catholic tradition.
Well, we kept the tradition every Friday all through the year, and not just Lent, right?
Okay.
When I was growing up, that's what we did.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's the way we.
That's when my mother shopped for fish on Fridays.
Uh huh.
Yeah, haddock or cod in New England. That's what we had a lot of the time. And lobster used to be so cheap back then.
Yeah.
I am dating myself. that we would have lobster. What about when you were growing up in Baltimore, John?
We would have rockfish. We would have rockfish a lot. My grandmother would bake it, and she would cook it with a little milk on it and butter, pats of butter, and that was always good. And then later, like Tim was talking about, cotties. We would have cotties often.
Yeah. homemade cotties, or would she buy them from somebody?
Well, sometimes she would make them, and then there was a place called Hale Seafood in Parkville, and she would get then once they got a little lazier, they just went up and got the cotties.
Yeah.
Well, I remember Hale's. I grew up in Parkville.
Oh, there you go.
Me
there you
too.
Go, Tim. Well, I like the homemade because you're guaranteed to have more fish in the cottie than maybe you get when you buy them someplace else.
Yeah.
And, Tim, I'm curious, what kind of fish do you fry?
We get an Alaskan pollock, and we use the loin, 4 ounce cut, and we just get that at a local restaurant place, and it does very well for us.
Yeah, it's a nice fish.
For
it's
cooking
nice
time and everything, when you use the fillet, the back end's thinner than the top end, and it gets crinkly and curls up on you and everything else.
Our Lady Queen of Peace is in Middle River, so this takes place in the parish hall.
Yes, it does.
And what time do you have to get there to get a crab cake?
Anywhere from 4 to 7. It's not a problem. What we're doing, as a matter of fact, they're over there making up some of the crab cakes now. If need be, on the fly, we're making up an additional 10, 12, 15 crab cakes right then and there and satisfying everybody's palate.
So you'll continue this through Good Friday?
Yes. Yes, we get right through Good Friday.
Okay, so if you can't get there tonight, Friday,
right,
then you have at least 3 more shots at it.
Correct.
Yeah,
great.
The Lenten
and,
fish.
This has been a real success the last couple of years, and because of that, we're able to. We've actually partnered with my sister's place down on West Fayette Street.
Yeah.
And the 23rd, that particular Friday, our council is going to be providing dinner for, we'll be prepared for 100 dinners. We've talked with the director down there, her first name is Rebecca, and set this all up. And she says they get anywhere from 60, 80, upwards to 100 people. And so we'll be taking dinner down for them, a piece of fish, crab cake, I call them Greek-style green beans, mm-hmm. and then some of our homemade pasta and coleslaw, and just take it all down there. All they'll have to do is heat that up on Friday and serve everybody dinner.
Mm. Hey, great. Can I ask you about the coleslaw recipe?
Yeah.
What's in that coleslaw besides cabbage?
Well, we've got carrot, green pepper, onion, sugar, vinegar, some celery seed.
Okay.
What else are they chopping up over there?
I like the green pepper, and I haven't thought of the green pepper.
That's
celery.
Nice.
Celery?
Yeah.
Your celery.
That sounds like a good slaw.
Like I say, it's a real treat because we're all over there just chopping ingredients for Miss Kathy.
And that Miss Kathy,
and
she's got it
she
going
starts,
on.
Then she starts just... You know, a little bit of this. There are no measuring cups coming out or, you know, teaspoons coming out. She's just kind of sprinkling. That looks good. This looks good. Starts mixing it up and does it to taste. And it's a real, real, real good coleslaw. Everybody compliments it.
It sounds like it's a lot of work, but it sounds like a fun project for solidarity among the worshipers at Our Lady Queen of Peace.
That is the main reason that we started doing this 8 years ago when Father Kevin came to our parish. He gave us the green light to go ahead and do that. And at first, you know, it takes a little while to build it, but it's mainly to get parishioners together. We got people coming from all around Baltimore, actually, because we do advertise, obviously, in the Catholic Review and some of the local papers. It's mainly to get the people in, sitting down, having a good time. It's a real nice atmosphere out in the hall.
How many meals do you serve? I meant to ask you that.
For over 3 weeks, we've already served 815 meals. I keep very good track of what we're doing and how much we need. John, you knew that. you better keep some copious records so you can make sure you have enough on hand to take care of everybody.
Well, do you have takeout?
Yes, we do.
No, can make a trip there. I'm up for a fish fry. So, Timothy, thank you very much.
Not at all. My pleasure.
Timothy McCubbin of the Lenten Fish Fry at Our Lady Queen of Peace Church in Middle River. More information about that in the notes with our podcast. And now we'll speak with Irene Duer and Freddie Herbert. They have 2 church meals to tell us about, one popping up this month, one in the fall. These in the German tradition at historic Zion Lutheran Church near City Hall. Here's Irene Duer.
Zion Church of the City of Baltimore is our official title.
And what do you have a title?
I am the chairman of the Worship and Music Committee and chairman of the Organ Restoration Fund.
Ah, that's right. That's why we have this upcoming dinner.
Uh-huh.
That is correct.
So coming up in 2 weeks is, how do we pronounce Rouladen? I've never seen this. This must be the German word. Beef Rouladen and Spätzle.
It is a Rouladen dinner.
A Rouladen.
That's
why
what I
am I saying like. Rouladen?
Yeah, Rouladen.
I'm sorry. I'm giving it the French pronunciation. So let's talk about this a little bit, Irene. This is a new tradition at Zion, right?
Well, we've done it 3 times in past years, not always consecutive years, but it is a fundraising event because in the last 8 years, we have undergone a pipe organ restoration, which cost us $615,000. And we took out a loan and did lots of fundraisers, and one of the fundraisers is this dinner. And German beef rouladen is a fairly traditional dish in most German households, usually reserved for special occasions and holidays. For those of you that don't know what rouladen is, it's made with thinly sliced beef. It's rolled around bacon and onions, and then it's simmered and braised for several hours and creates a very flavorful gravy.
Mm.
And the end product is similar to Italian bresaole, but it's a very different flavor profile. It's not got any tomato sauce or anything like that, but it kind of looks like bresaole because
right.
it's a rolled entree.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning bresaole. My mother used to make that, but not with that kind of stuffing. She had a bread and egg stuffing. But also, would you tell us about the spätzle? Now, I think I've had spätzle, but I'm not sure what it is.
Spätzle is basically the German-style flour and egg noodle.
Mm.
So it's made with flour and eggs. It's sort of a noodle shape, and it goes through a special implement that it's sort of like a sieve, and it creates these noodles that are then cooked, and they go very well with the gravy that comes with the rouladen.
We need to get one of those sieves because we do the spätzle for our annual Krautfest at Gertrude's, and our chef Doug, he does it all by hand. He doesn't have a little gadget.
Oh, it sounds like it would come in handy.
Right.
Yeah.
There are traditional cooks that will make it by hand and sort of drop it create it that way. But for the most part, we use the special tool that's designed to make spätzle.
I want to get one of them.
So you pronounce the German pronunciation, you said spätzle?
Spätzle.
Spätzle.
But spätzle, however you pronounce it, most people will be familiar with
okay.
it.
Okay. And this is coming up on March 24th?
That's correct. It's a Saturday afternoon. We're starting with an organ recital at 4 p.m. It'll be a short program to be performed by a master's program student from Peabody Institute. His name is Jordan Prescott. He'll perform a short program on our well-known organ now that it's been restored. And then following that short program, the dinner service begins at 5 p.m. That will be in our parish hall, which is known as the Adlersaal, which is a translation is Eagle's Hall. It is a fundraiser, and the tickets for the dinner are $50 per person. Mm-hmm. It includes the organ recital, if people choose to come to that. It includes the dinner and a complimentary glass of wine or beer, which are both German wines and German beers. It's a generous slice of beef that, once it gets filled and rolled, creates a nice dinner size entree,
mm-hmm.
and we'll make as many as we have the reservations for. In past years, we've had 180 tickets sold for this this event. So
yeah.
the lady and gentleman from our congregation that are cooking the dinner will probably cook about 200 rouladen.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, it does.
So, Irene, thank you for talking to us about that.
You're very welcome.
Yeah,
I hope that
yeah.
we get some people to come and join us
yeah.
for this special event.
And
as
for
I
a good
said,
cause.
This German entree is for special occasions, and it's really not offered on any local menu that I know of in restaurants, so it really is a German specialty that not many people cook anymore. So
I think there was a time in American households when this was kind of a popular dish. It might have been good housekeeping recipes for roulade of beef, right, John?
Yeah.
I remember going to people's homes when I was a kid or a little bit older, maybe in college, and seeing people serve this. And actually, I haven't seen this done in years.
No. So that's good reason to go to the dinner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Irene.
Well, thank you very much. Do you want me to hand over to Freddie now to talk about the sour beef dinner?
Yeah. So.
Okay, right. I will do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Freddie.
Okay, Freddie Herbert.
Yes.
Well, Freddie, thanks for making some time for me and John Shields here from Gertrude's. So we ought to talk about this tradition because John and I think that Zion's annual sour beef and dumpling dinner is probably the best known church dinner in the city, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's been around for how many years has it been served?
Well, we're not exactly sure, but we're thinking it's pretty close to 100 years.
Right.
Whoa.
And we ought to talk about sour beef. In John's cookbook, which cookbook is that, John, by the way?
Chesapeake Bay Cooking with John Shields.
John has his, great-grandmother's recipe?
Yeah, it's my great-grandmother's recipe.
And we ought to talk about this sour beef a little bit. Like, how do you make it? What's the preparation for it, Freddie, if you don't mind?
Oh, it's quite involved. We get like 500 pounds of beef, and we start about 2 weeks early to trim and then marinate it for about a week. And then after we marinate it, we brown it and cook it in the marinade, and then that marinade becomes the gravy.
I think of it as a sweet and sour, a Germanic sweet and sour kind of taste.
Exactly. The marinade is vinegar and water and spices. I'm not even sure if we put sugar in it. I don't think we put sugar in it. Mm.
What about
the marinade?
Your great grandmother's, John.
She put just a little bit, not much at all, but she put just a little bit to take a bite off of the vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And she thickened with ginger snaps.
So do we.
Ginger snaps.
We have an ancient machine here that grinds up all our ginger snaps.
Wow.
Wow. Now, I didn't know
it's
about
ancient.
That. That's how you thicken the gravy.
Mm-hmm. And, that brings up the sweetness.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
And now, how about the dumplings, Freddie? So that's a key part of this. So people in the parish pitch in to help out with the dumplings?
People from the church and any volunteers that are really interested in learning this craft are welcome to come and sit around our dumpling table, because we have a special table for dumpling rolling, and we roll 2,000 a day.
Whoa.
For how many days?
2 days.
2 days of, okay, you mean the 2 days of the dinner?
Right. The dinner is on Wednesday and Thursday, and each morning we roll 2,000 dumplings.
Wow. And so what do you make those dumplings with?
Well, I'd like to say we still did it with the potatoes, like used to happen here.
Right, yeah.
But now we import dumpling mix from Germany.
Oh, okay, yeah.
People say they're the best dumplings they've ever had.
By the way, we're talking about a dinner that will take place on a Wednesday and Thursday in October?
October 24th and 25th.
Okay, so that's why we're doing this show today. You need to get this on your calendar. If you live in Baltimore or live near Baltimore, you haven't done this, you got to get to it. I haven't done it in years. I'll get it on my calendar this year.
Let's put it on the calendar.
On Wednesday, we serve in our dining room, which is sophisticated dining service, tablecloths and the special Zion-labeled dishes and people that will serve you. Upstairs, we have a beer hall. And
I was just going to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the beer hall upstairs. So on Wednesday, we serve both downstairs and upstairs. Then on Thursday, we have lunch downstairs, and the beer hall opens at 4 o'clock.
Well, Freddie, that's great. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
And
we hope we see you this year.
Okay. Well, I like to go for the, how is it pronounced again? The rouladen. The beef rouladen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you should try it.
Freddie, thank you very much.
Sure. Super. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Freddie.
Bye-bye.
Ginger snaps.
Oh, absolutely. That's the key, one of the key components of it, because any kind of gravy, you're going to thicken it. and generally with a flower kind of thing. So the German adaptation is to take ginger snap cookies and you grind those up, and that becomes the thickening agent for that gravy. Mm. And it's phenomenal because, you know, you have that marinade that has all this flavor already, and then you're taking the ginger flavor from the cookies and the sweetness from the cookies. Oh, my God. That gravy is so good.
Two more questions about this.
Yeah.
Is it traditional to have red cabbage with sour beef and dumplings?
My grandmother would make it with red cabbage. She would do the potato dumplings, and then she would have red cabbage.
And is Mrs. Minnick's still available? There used to be the Mrs. Minnick's marinade for sour beef.
Oh, yeah. I did see that, but I haven't seen it recently. I haven't looked for it, actually.
Well, I haven't looked for it either. So yeah. I just wonder. I had some once upon a time because I made this at home.
Yeah.
It is good.
It is
good. Especially with a nice cold beer.
Yeah.
John, thank you very much.
And thank you, Dan.
John Shields owns and operates Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art. He and Henry Hong join me once a month on the podcast to talk about food. Thanks to Irene Dorr and Freddie Herbert for filling us in on the German dinners at Zion, get that name right, Church of the City of Baltimore. You gotta like a church that serves beer. There are other church events and ethnic festivals all year long in Baltimore and the region, and you can search any of them at baltimoresun.com/entertainment/WKND as in weekend, or pick up a copy of our weekend tabloid in a street box. Coming up on Monday, more about food, growing food. My guest will be the Reverend Heber Brown, and he'll be telling us about Baltimore's Black Church Food Security Network coming up on Monday's show. And that's our show for the weekend. Your thoughts are welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. Please review our show on iTunes if you get a chance. We appreciate that. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.